greater assortment of investable deals when capital is that much more scarce. So you should be feeling real good about being selected. For those of you that are unfamiliar with our firm, I think it'd be helpful just to get a little background, sort of our mindset. We are not in the conference promoting business, which may sound may surprise you. Our firm, Development Capital Networks, actually split from a company called Edge Development Capital in 2003, I think it was, and split into what used to be Edge is now Development Capital Networks, or DCN, you'll hear us say, and Cimarron Capital Partners. And Cimarron is a private equity fund-of-funds advisory firm. And if you're not familiar with the phrase fund-of-funds, basically what that means is Cimarron is investing in the VCs. So while you're seeking capital from the venture investors, right now venture investors are very eager and hungry to find limited partners, of which our affiliate company stands as being one of them. So we're just a little different animal. And then about 4 years ago or so, we were approached by the National Science Foundation, who liked our work, and then adopted the way we provide that you'll experience mentor support. The NSF liked that approach and now applies that same model to their phase one grantees that have received SBIR funding. So without blowing our horn too loud, if you will, I'm not trying to be boastful here. I'm trying to convey our mindset that we just simply do not view ourselves as conference promoters, but more so as being in the deal business and serving as an intermediary and taking that role very seriously. So with that in mind, what you'll see on that resource page there is, you know, 7-8 years worth of learning and tips and tricks of how to make the most out of this opportunity. And we consider ourselves your part of your team. So don't hesitate to call us, to invite us, to push us. In particular, you'll see some things on the resource page that allow us to invite targeted investors that you may want to see there. And we pull out the stops to get that investment audience there. So do not hesitate. We like to be leveraged that way. And that's all I guess I really wanted to kind of convey.
Well, we'll get started now. I'm just going to go through a few of the points on the resource page. I'm not going to go through everything, but just some of the more important features I wanted to point out. We do have, as you'll see, many dates and deadlines, and so I'll go over kind of the key ones. We do ask that you register by February 5th if you haven't done so already. This can just be one person from your organization. It essentially lets us know that you are confirmed to participate, and as soon as we receive your registration, we'll begin matching you with your first mentor. We typically match you with one mentor, and then we will match you with another down the road and give you plenty of time to work with each. The mentor conference calls take place over conference calls just like this, so there's no requirement to meet with your mentors in person. The other important deadline that you'll see is February 26th, and we ask that you provide a draft of your PowerPoint presentation for dress rehearsal phone calls. These are, again, conference calls where we provide your PowerPoint to a few individuals, and we go over your presentation kind of for the last time before the event. It allows you to get some unbiased feedback and to make any last-minute changes before the event. The next deadline that you'll see is Sunday, March 14th. This one is probably the most important. This is when we need you to upload your final PowerPoint presentation to your control panel. And all these PowerPoints can be uploaded from your presenter control panel. You can upload multiple versions. We just ask you to label them version 1, version 2, and then, of course, when it's your final, just label it final. And that's the one that we'll be providing to you on site at the WBT. All the presentations are preloaded, so there's no time on site to load the presentations onto a laptop. There's a technician that'll be running all the presentations, and they have everything a couple days in advance preloaded. So we just ask that you please do upload your presentation by that March 14th date. And then I'm going to take you down a little further on the resource page. We have a lot of materials in here that will be helpful as you prepare your six-minute presentation. There's a press release that's available. It's a template. Simply, if you've never distributed a press release before, it's just something to start with. We encourage you to, you know, talk about your participation and distribute this to your local channels. Could be your local newspaper. If you're interested in, you know, Business Wire or paying for a service, they'll also distribute it nationally. Paul mentioned the investor licensee invitations. We will invite investors and licensees on your behalf. This is up to 10 individuals that you want to meet at the event. So we want to create the audience around your technologies and the individuals that you would like to meet. We'll send them an invitation to attend. It's a complimentary registration on your behalf. It specifically mentions your technology and your company in the invitation. And we'll work with you. We reach out into our own extensive network, our partners' network. If there's, you know, a company that you want to meet but you're not quite sure of the individual, we'll help you find an appropriate point of contact and send them an invitation. So we'll work with you on this. The sooner that you can get us the list, the better. It gives us plenty of time to send out the invitation and allow them to make travel arrangements so that they can attend the event. Also on this page, you'll see information for getting your hotel reservations, the exhibit hall schedule, the move-in and move-out, and all your booth details. George Fern is our exhibitor firm, and they are can provide anything that you need on site. And then that takes us to the end of the page. And again, we will be updating this page with the presentation schedule, any updates, and so we encourage you to just bookmark this and have this on hand so that you can refer back to it as you go through this process. So today we also have Dave Levinsky with Growth Inc. joining us on the call. He's going to talk to you a little bit about what goes into really making the most impact out of your 6 minutes. And so I'm going to turn it over to Dave, and again, we'll have some time for Q&A at the end and some questions either for Dave, myself, or for Dan as well. So Dave, with that, I'll turn it over to you if you can tell us just a little bit about yourself and Growth Inc.
Excellent. Thank you for having me. My name, once again, is Dave Levinsky. I'm the president and co-founder of Growth Inc. Over the past 10 years, Growth Inc. has worked with over 2,000 entrepreneurs in helping them start their companies, develop their business plans, raise capital, and grow their companies. And today what I want to do is I want to talk to you about the presentation that you have to put on for the WBT showcase, and I'll talk to you about some pointers that you can make that you can do to make your presentation that much more compelling. Now, to start, on the WBT site, there is a presentation outline. They have it in a PDF format called Investor Presentation Outline, and it outlines a 6-minute presentation. I'm going to go through the presentation, that 6-minute presentation outline, and stress some key points that I want you to make throughout and that I want you to think about. And to start with, overall, I want to stress 3 points that you need to keep in mind when you're presenting to investors. The first key thing you need to keep in mind is that investors cannot invest in what they don't understand. Too many times, entrepreneurs present their businesses and it's really confusing. You really need to boil it down and make it as understandable as possible. The first thing that investors are doing is trying to figure out what it is that your company is doing. So I want you to practice your presentation in front of people that don't understand your business to make sure that they get it quickly. The second thing is don't cram too much information on the slides. If your slides are too busy, it's simply going to distract the investor. Guy Kawasaki has a great 10-20-30 rule of PowerPoint, which says that a PowerPoint presentation should have only 10 slides, last no more than 20 minutes, and contain no font smaller than 30-point font. Now, that's the goal. You only have 6 minutes, but the key point is keep your 30-point font, keep the text on the slides very, very little so it doesn't distract from your presentation. Likewise, the goal of your presentation to investors is not to tell the full story about your business. Rather, your goal is simply to create intrigue. There, no one's going to write you a check on the spot. It's a multi-meeting process. So your goal of your first investor presentation is simply to get them interested enough to say, hey, I want to learn more. Let's meet and spend some more time on this. So now I want to walk through the six specific slides that WBT has laid out and some pointers. The first slide they call Introduction of Technology or Organization. And this is your elevator pitch, and your goal here is to create interest. And a couple of few key points are, one is, as I mentioned before, investors cannot invest in what they don't understand. So you want to be as simple as possible. The best tip I have for you is called, in order to do this, is called the high concept pitch. The high concept pitch was developed actually in Hollywood, and it was, the first example was the movie Aliens was promoted as Jaws in Space. And my favorite example in technology or in the business world is a company called BookSwim, which promotes themselves as Netflix for books. And when you say, hey, we're Netflix for books, people automatically understand what it is you do. So definitely don't be afraid to use analogies. You know, we're like Motorola, but we, you know, offer our products at a discount or better quality, this and that. So definitely don't be afraid to use analogies, because the core goal is to get investors to understand what you're doing. And the next key point I want to make is focus on the benefits of what you do. I work with a company. We raised $7 million for a company that was in the RF MEMS space. And at the time, most investors didn't know what RF MEMS were, and many don't today. And so we focused on stating that this company will, the technology, this RF MEMS technology, will double your cell phone battery life and quadruple reception quality. Those are the benefits, and then investors are able to say, hey, I get that. That's a real need. I'm interested in RF MEMS or whatever it is you call it. So focus on the benefits. The final thing I want you to do right away is give a snapshot of where your company is right now, how old it is, where you're located, and you know, what you've accomplished. Are you a pre-revenue? Are you post-revenue? Just give a snapshot of where your company is right now, just to give the investor the wherewithal to say, okay, this is the company I'm looking at. The second slide is defining your market opportunity or market problem and defining and describing your solution. The two key points I want to make here is, the one word that I want you to keep in mind is pain. And we really want to discuss what the market pain is and why there is a need for a solution. And a lot of investors, particularly venture capitalists, look at pain. They look at, you know, is your solution an aspirin that sort of masks the pain, or is it a real cure for the pain? And ideally, you can show that you are a real cure for the pain. So define the market pain and show that you have a cure for that pain. And the second key point I want to make here regarding your market opportunity is, you need to make sure you focus on what we call the relevant market. And the relevant market is the market for your product or service if you had 100% market share. So nobody wants to hear about the $1 trillion U.S. healthcare market, for example, because no one company can do $1 trillion in healthcare revenues. It's impossible. Investors hate to hear, hey, if we only get 1% of this market. You need to define your relevant market. Who are the people, businesses, or consumers that could realistically buy your product, that fall into your target market, and what if every single one of them bought your product at the price you're going to sell it for, or service the price you're going to sell for, what would that total revenue be? You really want to think like General Electric here, where General Electric has always run its business, or in recent years has run its business, is if they're not the market leader, if they don't have, you know, 50%+ market share, they leave a market. So you need to think about the relevant market and how you're going to dominate your market. Investors want to see that you're in a market that's big enough, it's defined enough, that you can control and dominate that market, and ideally that market size can be $100 million or more. The next section of your presentation focuses on management and organization. And the two key points here are that investors, you know, always talk about investing in the jockey and not the horse. So the management team is critical. Now, clearly, if you have holes in your management team, that's fine. You want to be very, very open with that and say, hey, we're looking for somebody that can do this or that. The key point I want to make here is be very careful with superlatives here. And throughout your presentation, if someone on your team is, you know, you say world class, then you need to explicitly state why they are world class. You know, you got to realize that investors, most investors, particularly venture capitalists, spend, you know, 3 hours a day, possibly every day of the year and 4 years, listening to pitches and presentations from entrepreneurs. And they've heard everything. They've heard tons of magic teams touting that they're world class and that we're the best at this and the best at that, and that haven't materialized. You need to keep that in mind and be careful with any superlatives throughout your presentation. If you're going to use a superlative, then you need to be able to back it up, particularly in the management team section. Next section, your marketing and sales strategy. Here, it's very challenging with marketing and sales plans for early-stage companies because so many times it doesn't materialize. So the first thing you want to do is you want to talk about any sales traction that you already have, even if it's just, you know, beta customers or a customer telling you that they need your product or service. That's helpful. But any specific sales traction you have, you know, particularly beta tester or a customer paying for your product or service, the better. You really want to prove as much as possible that customers really do want your product. And that's going to, you know, take investors and move you from concept to reality, because investors don't really want to invest in concept as much as they want to invest in reality, meaning that you're able, that they have the confidence that you're going to be able to turn your concepts into reality. And then the next section of your presentation is the financial information. And the key point with presenting your financials to investors is that I want to make sure that you have some realism and that your financial projections are realistic or as realistic as possible. And for example, I'm not saying that you have to downplay what you're going to do, but if you're going to say, hey, we're going to go from, you know, zero to $100 million in revenue in 18 months, few if no companies have ever achieved that, you know, why are you going to be the first to do that? So you've got to be very careful with your growth rates and make sure that you're realistic. Because once you say we're going to generate $100 million revenue in year two, you're going to lose credibility for everything that you've said so far. So you just need to be credible. The other thing you need to do is, as much as possible, look at the financials of others in your industry and or public companies. So if you're in a market space where there are public companies in your space, which is often a good thing, because if there's a public company, it means that there is a large market. But if the public company has, you know, gross margins of 20% and you say you have gross margins of 60%, then something's generally wrong. So you need to make sure that your financial assumptions are realistic. And also, it's going to be important to understand, using realistic assumptions will tell you how much capital you need to raise and make sure that you don't run out of capital. And the final slide of your presentation, the opportunity for the investor, what you really want to do here is just recap what's exciting about your company, highlighting what you already covered. You have ideally a unique product or service, you solve a real market pain, you have a competent management team, you've made this and this and that accomplishments to date, and you have a solid, you know, business plan and strategy in place. So those are the keys to your presentation. I just want to point out before I end, three other key points that you need to be aware of when raising capital. And the first point is with regards to valuation. A lot of entrepreneurs get really tripped up on the question regarding, you know, what is your valuation? And the two points I want to make are, one is there really is no right answer to valuation. If you give a number that's too big, you lose credibility. If it's too small, you lose credibility. And if it's too big, you can also frustrate the investor. So really, the valuation question, the right answer is that the market will decide our valuation. What that means is that your goal is to get as many investors interested as possible, and you will then have the ability to choose the investor that gives you the best terms, best valuation, and the best support. You're the investor that you feel is going to help you achieve your dreams and your goals the best. Second point with valuation, I just want you to keep in mind that getting the highest valuation is not everything. If the investor, a great investor, will help you achieve success, and you also need to think about a smaller piece of a bigger pie is better than a bigger piece of a smaller pie. What I mean here is you always want to rather have 10% of a $100 million company, which is worth $10 million, than 100% of a $1 million company, which is only worth $1 million. So you got to think about expanding the pie. Second key point I want to make is, a lot of times investors are going to ask you, hey, you said you're looking for $5 million. What can you do with less money? And a lot of entrepreneurs customers get tripped up on that question as well. And what you need to do here is you need to think through your business, you need to think through your action plan, and specifically create what we call risk-mitigating milestones. So really trying to figure out what those key milestones are that eliminate risk. So if your goal is to create a new software program, you know, there's a lot of milestones. You gotta, you know, create the prototype. You gotta do beta testing. You gotta get the beta testing feedback and incorporate the feedback into the revised product. You gotta get distributors for your product. You gotta get customers to buy your product. There's all these actions that you need to take over the life of your venture. And each time you accomplish one of these actions, and each time you accomplish and achieve one of these milestones, you remove some of the risk out of the equation. So what you need to do is you need to plan out your risk-mitigated milestones. You need to figure out what they are. You need to figure out how much time and how much money it's going to take to get to each one. And so maybe $5 million will last you 2 years and you'll accomplish 6 risk-mitigating milestones. And so then maybe you could say, hey, listen, if we only had $1 million, we could accomplish these 2. And that's going to show the investor that you've really thought through your business, you really understand it. It's going to give them more credibility in you, and they may say, hey, I may fund this in tranches, meaning that I'll give you $1 million now, you do this, and then I'll give you $2 million later. So it's going to improve your chances of raising capital. And the final key point I want to make here is I can't stress enough the importance of advisors when raising capital. There are so many stories of companies that I've worked with and elsewhere that have raised capital thanks largely in part to getting advisors. Advisors can be other CEOs that have raised capital, could be industry executives, it could be potential customers of yours that you just add them, create an advisory board, and these are people that have a lot of good business experience. They're going to help with contacts and networking, and they're going to give you some good business advice. So I definitely want to stress that if you don't have an advisory board, it's something that it's going to, you know, pay for itself in terms of the time needed to create that board. It's going to pay for itself over and over again throughout the life of your venture. That is it.
Great. Thank you, Dave. Excellent advice as everybody, you know, begins to think about their 6-minute presentation and really how to make the best use of their time at the WBT. We are going to pass it along to Dan Watkins, and hopefully Dan is on the line.
I'm here.
Oh, great. Well, excellent. Dan is with DFJ Mercury, and he's going to talk a little bit more about what the investors are going to be looking for at the WBT. Dan has been involved with the WBT for a couple years, so he's got a really good frame of reference for what the audience is going to be looking for in terms of the information that you have on hand, both in your 6 minutes and back at your booth when you're having these serious conversations. So Dan, I'll let you just tell us a little bit about yourself and then get into your presentation.
Okay, well, let me say the about us for last, because it's not maybe not quite as important. I really enjoyed the previous talk. I think those were great points. What I want to talk a little bit about is sort of the investor psychology and kind of how I think as an entrepreneur, if I were going to jump back on the entrepreneur side, how I would view this sort of opportunity. The first thing I tell entrepreneurs is that venture capitalists are not like bankers or other folks with money. You know that a bank can loan money to everybody who's qualified, who comes to the door, and the more the merrier. Venture capitalists, we have a certain number of deals that we do a year, a certain number per partner. It may be zero if a fund's kind of late in its life. For us, we're early. I'll probably do 2 or 3 companies this year. I might do 1. Which means that we're really looking for the special opportunity, and it also means that we take some time to decide. So I think that frustrates entrepreneurs sometimes, but this is a process, and nothing happens overnight. And what Dave said about this is only to get intrigue and get initial interest is exactly right. I would even add timing with venture capital firm and can really influence that as to where the partner is in their cycle of, and you can't tell that. The other thing is personal chemistry, and that takes a while too. So I think getting to, you know, just having hallway conversations, kind of getting to know the venture capitalists a little bit, is good. And, I wouldn't expect anybody to pull out a checkbook or a term sheet, at the conference. So I think the best way, again, is looking at it as a first step. I see this as like marketing. It's like a commercial. The most important thing is what people remember, and they won't remember more than a few points because we'll see a ton of deals in a day, and you'll write down notes about a few of them, and a few of them we'll explicitly go and follow up on, but most of them, it's harder to remember the first one than the last one sometimes. So you really have to differentiate yourself and make your message very crisp. And again, I think the only job here is to get the next meeting. It's sort of like speed dating. All you want is to get the checkbox that, hey, I'd be interested in learning a little more here. So, and I even tell entrepreneurs that for our fund, the process from meeting a company with a new technology and funding it has taken anywhere from 2 months, which is lightning fast, to 2 years, where we track them, we like them, they were sort of working on some things, but they had to de-risk a few parts of their business model or their technology before we invested. Our expectations is that if we see something we really like, it may take 4 or 5 months if we're pretty excited. So it doesn't happen overnight, and so investors really have to see this as a long play-by-play process. The other thing I think investors ought to know about venture capitalists is that it's hard for you to tell if you have a no. And the reason for this is that venture capitalists tend to like entrepreneurs. They want them to succeed and also don't want to be pegged as just shooting everybody down. So the code for no is not a fit. So if you hear not a fit, it probably isn't a fit for the fund. It may take too much capital. The market's too small. The VC doesn't do life science, and they're an IT firm. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't build a relationship with them, but that's probably the most you'll hear. And if you want, you can still get some value out of the relationship even if you get a not a fit. So I tell entrepreneurs, don't necessarily grab investors and tell them your whole business plan. Hold on to them for 15 minutes and kind of and put them in a headlock in the hallway. What they'll remember then is not necessarily what you want. You want to give them the elevator pitch and end with a couple of really crisp points, and then I'll follow up later. And don't assume the investor will automatically meet with you either. I think that meetings for us are something we're particularly interested in. So don't push so hard that you for a meeting that you get a no. I think you would all you want to do is start to build a relationship. So I would if I were an entrepreneur at this conference, I would introduce myself to as many investors as possible because it's a numbers game. I would follow up with an email with everybody and send them a PowerPoint slide deck. And if they weren't interested, say, do you think this is a fit for another firm that you know of? Because that happens a lot, that we refer deals to other firms that are in a different space or a different stage than we are. Not every venture capitalist will get back to you, and it may take a little while, and part of that is because they're just overloaded with deal flow. But you can always follow up with another email a few weeks later if nothing happens. So I'd say, bottom line is think of this as networking. Now you know a venture capitalist, you can ask them a question, you can send them a plan for what fund this might fit with if it isn't theirs. You can even pitch your next deal to them if you do a good job of sort of building a relationship. So I guess the last thing you ought to do when you're interacting with us is, I think if you ask questions and say, after your talk, and say, hey, what concerns do you think the audience might have had about my talk, or what questions do you think the other, weren't answered, you can get some good feedback if you do it right there while it's still fresh in our mind. So a couple of other points that I wanted to talk about, the sort of the, what's in the pitch, and I think this Dave's summary was really great. There's some good information at garage.com, some good resources for talking about how to give a pitch. For me, I think the don'ts are, don't calculate the investor rate of return. We do that ourselves, and it just shows that you don't really understand our business. Don't say the plan is very conservative or present an overly conservative financial plan, because we knock it down mentally. And so if you take a huge discount, we're still going to take our 50 or 80% discount on it. So be realistic, but don't knock it down so much that when we take our discount, they probably won't make, nobody makes their plan. So the some of the things out earlier, the audience drifts away, the venture capital stuff drifts away, and I think, I personally, for me, those are market size. I want to know what the real market size is, not the, 500,000 people get cancer every year. We spend $100 billion on cancer therapy in the United States. That doesn't tell me how your, cancer therapy product, what the real market for that is. I want a kind of a real market size that you've determined by knowing something about the market, not just pull a report from Frost or one of the analysts. And then get out what the solution and the value is, and they've talked about that. I think you also have to put a little bit on the technical. You have to do one technical slide at least. You have to explain it so that everybody can understand it. But I also think you'll have a number of investors who are fairly technical who would like to understand if you do just a tiny bit of, and put a tiny bit of little information on that slide to indicate that you really understand the technology and you're the world leader in it. I think that's always good. Don't spend a huge amount of time on otherwise other people drift away, but for me, I like to know that the team is really on top of the technology and they understand it. And it only takes, it's like 15 or 20 seconds in the presentation. And I guess the last thing is, I love to see people that really know the customer and the industry well, whether that's by customer interaction, by making sales, by focus groups, or by having a team member that really understands what the current customer needs are. Because a lot of technology companies get started and they anticipate what the customer wants without actually kind of proving it. And to be fair, the only real proof is to have something to sell and be able to sell it. But you can learn a lot by interacting with the customer early in the process. And we like to see that. We like companies that sort of adapt to the customer, what the customer is telling them. And I guess finally, on the last slide, a lot of folks have a list of why this is a great investment. We'll make you a ton of money, it's a multi-billion-dollar market. Everybody does that. On the last slide, what you want is, what do you want the person to remember and to tell their, how are they going to pitch it back to their partnership? And maybe it's, the Netflix of books, and it's a $100 billion market. That's enough. And that's where you want to end is what you want people to remember. So with that, my summary slide is we're a venture capital firm. We work on almost exclusively on university and incubator-based companies. We're the first investor in almost all of our companies, and we invest in companies with very large markets, usually in the billions of dollars. And our website's www.dfjmercury.com.
Great. Thank you, Dan. It's excellent information to take with them to the WBT and really any of the conversations that they're going to be having with investors at any point during this process and beyond the event. So I'll open it up now just to some general questions. These could be questions for Dave at GrowthInc. This could be questions for Dan or myself. And so just in case, if you're all on mute, press *6 to unmute if you have a question to ask.
Hi, Amanda. This is Dan Grant, Parallel Group. I have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
For Dave. Hi, Dave. You talked about sales traction. This actually goes more to a licensing product rather than capital, but I suppose it works for both sides. What is your feeling on... We have a product that we received a patent for 2 years ago, and while we're out there trying to market it, we keep coming across potential infringers. What do you feel about using the fact that there's potential infringers out there to prove that there is a market for this? Because I'm aware that could backfire and just sort of show that you're not focused on marketing your own product. You're looking at what other people have done and maybe a case of sour grapes. How do you think that plays in sales traction?
Yeah, that concerns me as well. In terms of infringers, you want to focus on selling your product and not worry, spend your days focused on legal issues. And so that infringes definitely does point to competition, which is a good thing because competition implies that there is a market, but I would not use the fact that there are people that are infringing upon your technology as a way to prove that there is a market. I would much rather say, hey, there, to prove customer needs, to get customer testimonials, to have customers using a substitute and focusing on, hey, this, the fact that other companies are infringing upon this as proven that there's real customer demand.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Sure.
I've got a question for Dan. This is Sean Easworth with RetroSense Therapeutics, and you know, one of the things that Dave pointed out that entrepreneurs get tripped up on is evaluation. And I was wondering if you could expand on that from an investor's perspective and maybe point out some other areas that you see entrepreneurs getting tripped up on.
Great question, Sean. Evaluation is tricky. We actually find that it's a very emotional issue, and you know, it's also one where there's obviously no analytical way to determine valuation. I think what, as a venture capitalist, what we really want to know is it's going to be in a range where we operate, because every firm sort of operates with certain, usually a certain sort of range of valuations that they like to enter at, and it could be higher, could be lower, but it's kind of hard to get to that. It might be useful to talk to ask a specific question to the venture capitalist, and they might be willing to even share, say, hey, you know, where our fund is targeted at is valuations in sort of this range. But I think for the entrepreneur, I agree with Dave, it's not a great question to answer. I don't know if I would necessarily say I let the market determine, because I also want to know that the entrepreneur is not focused solely on valuation. We've seen companies, even in our own portfolio, where decisions on funding have been made with the group that gave the highest valuation, and it turned out not to be the group it turned out that they didn't add any value. In fact, it may be destroyed value in one case, where a smarter move might have been to think about what the end game, what they brought to the table, what their reputation was in terms of interaction with other venture capital firms and with entrepreneurs. So I don't have a great crisp answer for you, but I wouldn't necessarily pitch out that answer unless, if I had done a funding, I think it's very fair for you to say our last funding was at a post-money valuation of whatever, but I wouldn't be drawn into defining a valuation unless there was something internally that had already put bounds on that, some financing. So the other things that sort of trip them up, I guess, the wanting to raise too much capital at the start. These days, you're seeing a real trend towards, as Dave said, thinking about risks and milestones, and how do you get to a point where you can raise more capital for the milestone, or you can de-risk it, and the early investor can put more money in. And entrepreneur thinking about what the milestones are. Hey, if I do this, I think the market will reward me, and here are the couple of the next milestones. And sort of talking that through with the venture capitalist, I think it shows a lot of sort of foresight in terms of how a deal would be structured and how a company would be run in this current environment, where you really have to use every dollar very efficiently.
Dave, this is Krishna Gazula. On that point, let us say you projected to have, like, let us say $2 million, and then you structure the deal the way you're talking about, let us say, upfront for the next 6 months, let us say $500,000, then the next 6 months, let us say another $500,000, and then following year, let us say $1 million. So that is the kind of structure you put together. But in terms of valuation for the VC, how do you come out with? I mean, do you come out with a valuation for $500,000, and then when they fund another $500,000, you have another value? I mean, how do you come out with what is the value for the VC?
This is Dave. I'm not sure if that was for me or Dan. I think everything else is negotiable. Dan, I don't know if you ever fund in tranches like that. Do you want to tag that?
Well, we almost always fund in tranches, it's too complicated to say for us. Every firm is different, and to be honest, there are a lot of firms that don't like to fund in tranches. But for us, yeah, we take a valuation and we say, here's the money that's going to come in on these milestones. And then maybe there's, you know, one early milestone, license of technology from the university could be an easy one, or demonstrate that the technology performs at this level, and then more money comes in to sort of do maybe more of the milestone, so that you know very often I think the solution to that is you make it up to the investor, but if the investor doesn't invest, maybe they have to go off the board and lose some share, have a kind of a penalty. That's one thing we've done, but it works out different in every case. But I would never do a deal where I actually define future financing valuations. I think that's your crystal ball, you just don't know. I think you have to pick a valuation and then figure out the tranching. And maybe the valuation ends up being a little higher because of this tranching than you would if you just raised a small amount of money. But it's the simplest thing is one value.
Yeah. But I think the complication comes in is, let us say you go through 1 year, and now all of a sudden you realize you need more capital than what the original deal was. Now you need to raise, let us say, another $5 million. And now the existing investor brings in $1 million with the old valuation, but the new investor will put in the money at the new valuation. So that makes it more complicated, isn't it?
Well, you need $5 million, and you've got a second tranche with, find out you need $5 million to get to the next milestone instead of $1 million. I doubt the first investor is going to put in their $1 million.
Yep. Okay.
You've got a bigger problem if it's that far off. But I do agree there is an issue of timing where you don't want the deal to be too complicated, and you do want some space to be between. And value creation would be between the end of one round, the last tranche of one round, and the first one of the next. But, it's a case-by-case thing.
Yep, got it. Yeah.
Pete Shaunis with Parallel Solutions Group. If you're presenting a solution that there's a major company out there doing something similar, is that going to scare off investors?
Well, this is Dan. I'll take a swing at that. No. It could be a good proxy. You're just going to have to show how you're better than them and how you're going to win. But if there's a large company going after a similar market, it may be good data that shows that it's an attractive market. But, again, you got to show it not how you're going to win by, you're going to outperform them by 10%, but you're going to outperform them by 10x or 2x or whatever the appropriate large amount is, because they're bigger and have more capital and may have a lead. But I don't think it's bad. I think you actually spin it as positive.
Okay, thank you. This is Dave. I just want to reiterate on that. I totally agree. As just mentioned earlier, competition implies that there is a real market, and DenSense can give you data as well. I just want to make sure that you focus on numerous ways that you have competitive advantage, because the big competitor obviously is going to have more dollars at their disposal and a track record and a brand name. So you really need to think through multiple ways, and you can't just say, hey, we're going to execute better. You really need to think through on multiple levels how you're going to dominate that market and beat out that competitor.
And again, this is Krishna. In terms of talking about the competition and the margins. Let us say a public company today is making 15% margins, and you come in with a new paradigm and show that you can make 40% margins. What is wrong with that? I mean, why can't VCs swallow that? Because in the first place, you're coming with a new paradigm because the existing vendors cannot provide that kind of solution. So you're showing there's a new way to improve efficiency and bring better productivity, as an example. And you show better margins. I mean, is there anything wrong with that? And why investors cannot swallow that?
This is Dave. I mentioned before that you don't want to say your margins are out of whack with competitors, but clearly if you have a new paradigm, then that's what's unique about you, is that you can get better margins with a different solution. So I think that's fine. Dan, I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, better margins for you or better margins for your customers. The problem is you don't want to get in a price war with a large company that can just drop their price and make your margins so small as it's not interesting, and you can't raise more money. So I think part of it is understanding what part of what you're offering the customer, the buyer, really cares about. And I think a lot of companies miss
Well, I'll leave just any last-minute questions, maybe one more question that anybody might have for Dan or Dave or myself. If there's anything that we didn't address on the call or questions that you might have after the call, feel free to email me. And again, this is Amanda with the WBT. You can go ahead and send me an email. Let me know if you have any questions about the event or about the presentation. There is additional resources, of course, on the resource page, and a lot of the points that both Dave and Dan went over in their presentations are available, including an outline of a 6-minute, what it might look like, and again, it contains a lot of the information that they went over today. So I want to thank both Dave and Dan for participating. It was a great discussion at the end and a lot of excellent information to take away from the call today. And we look forward to working with each of you. I'll just go over the dates and deadlines one more time. There are a few key deadlines we want you to pay attention to. The February 26th one for your presentation for the critic calls, and then also that March 14th deadline. The entire way through the process, we'll send you reminder emails. So anytime that there's something important coming up or a deadline is approaching, you'll, of course, get email reminders. And if you have any questions, feel free to contact us as well.
Amanda, if we have a couple of seconds, one
sure.
thing I wanted to ask is, I see different categories in these presentations. How many are kind of... how many categories are put into and how many kind of picked and so on in the best presentations and so on?
I'm sorry, when you say categories, you're referring to...
Right, the way they are kind of separated them out as different groups are presented and picked as the best presentation.
Well, there's going to be roughly, we've invited slightly over 100 presenters. They are grouped by industry sector. The presentations take place on Tuesday and Wednesday, March 16th and 17th. And again, those are going to be on multiple stages in the exhibit hall grouped by industry sector. I don't know if that addresses your question.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, if there's no more last-minute questions before we wrap up, again, I just want to thank everybody for participating on the call, and we look forward to working with each and every one of you.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.